Just last week, I asked a shall-remain-anonymous colleague if she ever makes New Year's resolutions. No, she replied. I asked her if she would ever consider making a resolution to take into account her investments and finances. No, she replied before adding, I would never do that. That sounds horrible. What about you? This is Central Standard. I'm Bill Anderson. Today, making a resolution to review the finances and plan for 2014. We'll give you facts, hopefully some inspiration, as the Cash Money crew returns to the studios. Plus, the crew has some year-end ways to reduce your taxes for 2013. Sound boring? I hope not, because these panelists can help, regardless of your income bracket. It's Central Standard after the news from NPR. I've been told that January gets its name from Janus, the two-faced god who looks backwards into the old year, forward into the new. There's a bust of Janus in Rome. If you touch it and cross the nearby bridge, it's supposed to bring good fortune. I'm sure it does. I'm so sure it does. But on the remote chance it doesn't, the Cash Money crew joins KCUR in the studios this morning, and they can change your fortunes. And you won't have to come in here and touch their head. Not that that wouldn't be fun. I'm Bill Anderson. We're here to help you devise a financial plan for 2014. And with 2 weeks left in 2013, they even have some tips on ways you can lower your taxes this year. But let's start with that resolution, that resolve to develop a plan for 2014. The Cash Money crew members are Sandy Weaver, owner of Financial Security Advisors. Good morning.
Happy holidays, Bill.
And welcome back to the studios. Also with us, Alex Petrovic, owner of Petrovic Financial Services.
Morning, Bill. Nice to be back.
Nice to see you as well. And Louis Butchell, KHC Wealth Management, all three certified financial planners. Nice to see you.
Good morning.
Happy holidays to you. So, Sandy, I'm going to start with you. I'm looking at a list of the 10 most common New Year's resolutions. I see diet. I see exercise. I see more work-life balance. We all could use that. And down the list, saving money. But it shows a pair of scissors and a pile of coupons. So there we go. That's our financial plan, right?
Too shallow.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go a little little bit deeper. And Lucas, this one for you. On a list of the top 10 most commonly broken New Year's resolutions, I see get out of debt and save money. And this is on the list of broken resolutions. And as a financial planner, is this kind of what you see?
Yes.
Absolutely. I think people come in with great intentions and expectations about getting their financial house in order. And like a lot of New Year's resolutions, the energy and enthusiasm wanes as they kind of get going into the new year.
Yeah. Alex, how about you?
No, I agree. It's we hear so much about New Year's resolutions. I think it puts a lot of pressure on people. And maybe we can talk about how to relieve some of that pressure. Because it's no fun to set all those goals and then not reach most of them.
So what's up here? Are we in denial? I mean, is it just simply a matter of being overwhelmed and stressed out, Sandy?
Yes, I think so. I think it's important to step back and take a look at the 5 years of financial planning, figure out where you are on that road, and then set goals. Because lots of times just doing that little piece, knowing where you're headed, will fix a lot of the problem.
Okay. Now, I'm going to assume a good first step is just taking an assessment of our debt, of our savings, of our investments. Am I leaving anything off the list here? Lucas?
You hit the usual suspects, and you're right. The first step is kind of get a state of the state, kind of outline your assets and liabilities and the terms of those. Evaluate kind of how much you're saving today and kind of the way you're managing that cash flow to achieve that savings. That really is the secret is your cash flow. That's where everything starts and ends. And really spending some time there and understanding it and then doing some planning around that is really the key, I think, to managing the financial situation well.
So I should be writing this out then as I'm looking at my documents and figuring out what my assets are and what my debts are in comparison. Right?
Yeah. Absolutely. I'd kind of take a snapshot, write it out. It doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be pretty. But putting it down either on the computer or the old-fashioned way, a pen and paper, kind of puts it out there and kind of gets it in front of you. And that's a great place to start from.
And, Alex, what would be the next step?
Well, I start with the thought in my own life is to look at what short-term issues are, and then maybe medium-term and then long-term, and to separate those goals and those aspirations so that you can see, okay, immediately, here's what I need to look at.
Okay.
And then maybe middle-term, and then, of course, for most of us, long-term is our retirement. But it also has to do with your own personal life. You know, your community involvement, maybe your spiritual involvement, your financial. This really all ties together, because if there's one piece of that that's kind of out of sync, it's going to, you know, rub up against the others.
Mm-hmm. Sandy?
And I look at it a little bit differently, too. I look at five areas of financial planning, and if you get this one done, you move on to the next. And so I think it's important to assess where you are and pick maybe one thing to work on in this next year and work on that.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, don't try to tackle the whole thing. Just take one small step.
And I think I heard Lucas suggest that if we have debt, maybe that should be our first priority.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's a good first step.
All right.
Take care of debt and build that emergency fund.
Lucas, how do we do that? Let's say I've got, college funds, a college loan that's due on a monthly basis, or a pretty substantial credit card debt, which a lot of people have.
Yep, I think the first place to start with the debt is to kind of get it all outlined, understand the balances and the interest rates, and then kind of figure out how much cash you have on a monthly basis to commit to that debt. That's where cash flow comes back into play. And then, usually the conventional wisdom is to pay off the highest debt first. That doesn't always ring true. You know, student loan debt is something that I tend to pay that off at a measured pace, but not get really crazy about paying that off unless you're dealing with close to double digit interest rates. But starting with the credit card, the consumer debt, that's usually the best place to start, especially if you've got higher interest rate cards where you're paying a lot of interest along the way.
But how can I figure out how much to apply to that monthly credit card debt as an example?
Again, it comes back to your cash flow. So,
okay.
Kind of building that budget, what's coming in, what's going out, and then ultimately, you have the minimum payment. I definitely suggest paying more than that if you're in a situation where you're not paying it off on a monthly basis. Allocating those dollars and, budgeting tends to have a negative connotation, but it's really important to kind of understand kind of what you have in terms of income, what your required spending is, and then you get to make choices about discretionary spending, and then one of those choices can be paying down debt. And if you're trying to get your financial situation on a better path, that's a great place to start and make choices about what you spend money on and then how much you allocate to debt pay down.
Alex, give us a snapshot of your client list. Do they generally carry a lot of high interest, revolving interest credit card debt? And does that kind of compromise their ability to work on the investments? And as you talked about earlier, the retirement fund?
Well, it's sort of different in our thinking, our business, because most of the clients that engage in us or hire us have money to invest. Otherwise, they're really not clients. So I see lack of those issues with our typical client in terms of high credit debt. We do know that when we go out into the community and do pro bono work, that debt credit issues is probably the number one issue we hear from those people that call in. But for basically in our clientele, that's not that big of an issue because they have money, and they have money because they've been able to save it and not make foolish debt investments.
This is an ignorant question. Some debt is probably good?
Yes.
Okay.
It can be.
Sandy?
Yes. Take, for example, if you can get a mortgage and you got one at 2.85 or 3%, that's a good use of funds because you can probably earn more than that with the investments that you have. So, let's say you have a $100,000 mortgage at that, but you also have $100,000 invested in the stock market at that. Over the long run, that's a smart idea because on a pure numbers basis alone, you should be able to make money on that.
Okay. So, Lucas, can you add to that?
Absolutely. I think debt is not bad in and of itself. It's actually a great way to open doors and use that leverage in a responsible way to allow you to do more things than you may have been able to do if you're paying cash for everything. However, the key thing is using it responsibly, making sure you can make the payments that you're committing to, and also, you know, getting reasonable terms in terms of interest rate.
Alex.
Yeah, well, in addition, young people coming out of college need to establish credit, and it's very hard to establish credit unless you have, you know, debt.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to open up credit cards and pay them timely in order to establish good credit. So
I do think that when we see clients, one of the key differences on whether a client's going to even have a financial planner or not, whether a person is going to have positive experiences through their life financially, is this thing about getting a handle on what Lucas refers to as the cash flow. You know, keeping those spending patterns down below your income so that you can accumulate for future, for college, for retirement, for future major purchases. Unless you can do that, you know, there are lots of good resources. Consumer Credit Counseling can help you, Mint.com, Quicken, Financial Planner, you know, that is
stuff. And those are all free services.
Pretty much free,
close
yes.
to free. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Making a resolution to take care of your financial portfolio in 2014, regardless of your age and income. That's the conversation on Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Bill Anderson. Financial planners Alex Petrovic, Louis Butchel, and Sandy Weaver are here. We call them the Cash Money Crew. And speaking of, call. Your calls are welcome at 235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Do you have financial goals for next year? Do you wonder how you're going to achieve them? Give us a call or email us. centralstandard@kcur.org. I have to throw this out, and I'll throw this to you, Lucas. Some things may be missing, or you know, we may need to enlist others. You know, we're dealing with a family dynamic here, and we might not necessarily, husband and wife or partners may not be on the same page. One may be kind of a spender and, you know, desires to make purchases on the credit card. The other is a little bit more responsible in maybe thinking long term. How do you reconcile that? How do you, as an advisor, get them on the same page?
That we see that a lot in this business, and it can be challenging at times. But you know, one of the things that I really focus on is coming back to what's most important. So focusing on their goals, mm-hmm. and then kind of starting the conversation there. What's most important, not just to one spouse, but to both spouses. And really trying to ferret out, you know, what makes them tick, what motivates them, and then using that as the launching point to have the conversation about, you know, what do we need to do in order to accomplish these goals, and then it's kind of setting things up in a way that can help make that happen as easy as possible. One way may be to change the way you spend. So if you can agree on these are the things that are important to us. Then change the way you spend and your spending habits to contribute to that. So kind of the paying yourself first mentality where you kind of set up automatic savings that's automatically going to fund those goals before you even start spending on the discretionary things is one effective tool or okay. planning technique to use.
So are you the guy that I'm sitting across from that says, Bill, I know how you feel. I felt the same way. Let me tell you what I found out. Do you use that?
Absolutely. I've definitely you know, had a difference of opinion on in terms of focus with a spouse, and I think we all have if we've been married for any length of time. But you know, making sure that you know, the clients understand that, you know, we all struggle with this. I have a couple of stories when I'm doing cash flow planning with folks. You know, I'm a Starbucks guy. I like enjoy a latte probably too much, and uh-huh. You know, I had an aha once after kind of doing some cash flow tracking myself and figured out I was lived next door to a drive-through Starbucks and was spending way too much time and money there.
And I wasn't being dismissive. I was just, you know, that's an excellent sales technique, I think, personally, especially if you can bring yourself into that story, having had a similar experience. It gives you credibility as far as I'm concerned. Sandy?
I have one more thing to add. One of the things that we try to get a couple to do is to both get the information because, you know, information is so powerful. But if they're both involved in the cash flow management and they don't both take, you know, you do this weekend and the next weekend I'll run the books and see how we look. So both of them see the big picture. That helps a great deal.
Alex.
Yeah, one of the things we do when we first engage a potential client is to ask them to fill out, to grade themselves individually and on all the major areas of financial planning and savings and so forth, to find out what they see as their own weaknesses individually, typically they come in fairly close. But the other thing that we do is that not only do we ask for what their high-level goals are, but we ask for what they perceive as the obstacles to reach those goals.
Okay.
So instead of us telling them, hey, this, and then it starts a conversation not only amongst us but amongst themselves as what they see as obstacles. And it could be, you know, we spend too much, we vacation too much, we give too much to the kids, or I'm worried about the market, I'm worried about my health. But to get that process going so that they buy in to their strengths and weaknesses.
Mm-hmm. So let's start talking about some goal-setting ideas, and let's start with perhaps talking about building up a cash reserve. Is that a good
absolutely.
Place to start? Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Alex.
And there's a debate about how much you should have.
I know.
But obviously, a three-month cash flow is important. And it could be in something that's maybe still has a minimum amount of risk, as in maybe a short-term bond fund or money market fund, CD, treasuries, savings bond, but something that's fairly liquid, obviously. But that 3 months is probably the minimum. And then depending on their own, if they're in a volatile industry, it might be more. So that is really important.
Okay. Sandy?
Goes hand in hand. We put that on a level field with paying off the debt, you know, especially consumer debt where you're not getting tax deductions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so both of those go hand in hand.
Lucas.
Yeah, I think the emergency fund is an often overlooked piece of a financial situation. People want, you know, a lot of people talk about paying down debt, and then everybody wants to talk about investing. And that cash cushion, especially now when, you know, interest rates are really low and your savings account's paying next to nothing, feels like idle money. But it is really an important component to give you the cushion to handle unexpected expenses or, a job loss or a change in income, something like that that helps you protect and you know, avoid some trouble down the road potentially.
And that it requires some discipline because a person should only look at this emergency fund, this cash reserve, for such things as a car repair, a new furnace, the loss of a job, God forbid, right?
Right.
Yeah. Alex?
Right. Well, I would just add to that, part of looking at the cash reserve is a part of the overall budget. And that word, I mean, it scares people. I was reading someplace where certain planners use intentional spending as a way not to intimidate people because people mm-hmm. hate budgets. I mean, they hate the word of it. Unless you're really that kind of person that loves that minutia, then intentional spending is a way to then, okay, this is what I want to spend. Well, if you have credit, you're going to put that in there. But it's another way to look at it, maybe make it feel less intimidating or less punitive.
This is Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Bill Anderson. We're here to give some tips on how you can get a better grip on your finances in 2014. Sandy, did you have something to add?
Well, I think you were pointing out that sometimes when you build up an emergency fund, then the temptation to spend it is too much.
Well,
Well, yes, you can set up some roadblocks.
Mm-hmm.
What we do is we'll have an account for, you know, a client, and it's not an investment account, which we manage. It's their reserves account. And so that means they have to call us up to get the money pulled out. Sometimes instead of using a money market fund, we'll actually use like a very ultra short-term bond fund. And so you not only have to call up your advisor, you have to do a sale, you have to do a trade in order to get the money out. It's sort of like dieting. Don't buy potato chips and stick them in your cupboard. You know, put some roadblocks in there.
No, hide the chips
where
no one else sees them. That's my strategy. Do you have financial goals for next year? Do you wonder how you're going to achieve them? Join the conversation at 816-235-2888. Steven's joining us. Hi, Steven.
How are you doing, sir?
We're doing well. How about yourself?
Great. Listen, this is a very good conversation. I'm actually a finance professor there at UMKC.
Good deal.
And I've really been enjoying hearing a lot of the tips that your guests are providing today. A lot of good advice there. Something I'd like to add is that I think one of the things that's been a big help for my wife and I, it's not as if we're the exemplars of, you know, perfect financial planning here, but one of the things that we did years ago back in the late 80s was actually begin collecting, serious types of art and antiques, using that as our, quote, spending which we had, you know, great fun with. But at the same time, these are really, this spending was actually true investments. And many times throughout our life together, we had kids go to college or whatever and needed to raise some money for whatever. And we could just peel things off the walls if necessary and show them. That'd be generally extremely, you know, good rates of return on those, much better than we would have earned in the stock market.
That's so, really interesting.
My advice is generally to maybe people could look into things with respect to, okay, you're going to spend money, you like to spend money. It's really not so much the spending is the problem, it's what people spend the money on. And I think that's an important point to keep in mind.
What exactly do you have on those walls, Stephen?
Well, we collect etchings, photographs, things like that. So,
okay.
They're important pieces, but they're not the sort of thing that we can unload in a moment's notice either. So this is hardly what one would consider to be emergency cash, as it were.
An interesting contribution. Thanks for your call.
No problem.
Happy holidays. Alex?
Sort of a side note on that. My wife Peggy and I, one of our favorite TV shows is The Antique Roadshow.
Yes.
And we're always going, oh my, we would sell that so fast.
Yeah, me too. Sandy?
Did he want to share his address with us?
No. I was tempted, but now I said, no, we can't go there. The four of us would end up there tonight probably. Lucas?
I love the technique. It's, hey, we can have a conversation about college funding, and when you have another couple over and you're talking about that, you can talk about your college fund right there up on the wall.
So now should we move on to savings now? Where should we go with this conversation? Where's a practical place to go, Sandy?
Well, I think on the road to financial planning, then once you have that emergency fund set up, then you take a look and insure your risks and make sure you have the right insurance and not too much. And those are just basics. Do you have your house insured? Do you have renter's insurance if you're in an apartment? Do you have your auto insured? Do you have an umbrella if you need it, whether your assets are that high or if you're driving a motorcycle or, hauling around, a big brother, big sister child on a boat every weekend, and then also take a look at life insurance. Do you have kiddos, that you usually see a need for life insurance at that point? And do you have disability insurance? Does your employer provide it? Or if not, what are you going to do about it? And then in your 50s, you want to make sure you take a look at long-term care insurance. Mm-hmm. Lots of times people will trade off the disability and pick up the long-term care. But you want to make, cross all your I's or cross your T's and dot your I's on that.
Yeah. And it's just as important as we look at this to make sure we're not underinsured.
Yes.
I mean, overinsured can be an issue, mm-hmm. too. But right, Lucas?
Absolutely. It's getting the right amount of coverage and the right type of coverage and making sure that you've got those things at a competitive price so you can shop it and look to save some dollars on premium. But you also want to make sure that the coverage is there because it's there for a reason to protect you or your assets in the event that something bad should happen.
And we should be doing it's so easy to compare prices anymore on the internet. That's probably the best place to go.
As well as if you're fortunate enough to have good employee benefits, uh-huh. It's clearly look at when open enrollment happens. Look at all the different – because, your A companies will have disability, long-term care, life mm-hmm. insurance, health spending plans and whatnot. And generally, they're cheaper. And
because it's like based on a group,
they're groups,
participation?
Right. And some of them you can take with you when you retire, depending. And it's a good question to ask. But employee benefits, a good place to start as well.
Yeah. Now, that wouldn't necessarily be true for a small business, would it? The benefit package?
No.
Yeah.
No, it's not necessarily true for that. You have to go to the open market. Something like einsurance.com can help you get quotes.
Okay. Anything else to add about insurance before we move on?
No, I think Sandy did a really nice job hitting all the key topics there.
Okay. And so where do you want to go with this conversation next? Where's a good stopping point here?
I would this is really a long term, but very short term as well. It's just breaking the loop of poor financial planning, which would educating your children about saving, giving, working.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some good sites. I know the CPA have feedthepig.com.
Feedthepig.com.
Right.
Okay.
And there's several good books out there if you read. I know American Century had a really good one about getting kids involved. But it's trying to, you know, start a process in the family and engage them about here's why we give, here's why we save, here's the different areas that we save. But trying to educate your children because, as we know, a lot of kids come out of college and they don't have much, they really haven't had any experience.
Yeah, yeah. And Lucas?
I think the thing I'd like to leave with the listeners is it's great to have goals and to kind of outline what you want to do. The other piece is getting a way to make yourself accountable and to break the habits, because I think people are such creatures of habits, and looking for our ways to remind yourself of what you're really working towards. You know, there's all kinds of different ways to do it, from, you know, putting things visible in your home to remind you to get in an accountability buddy, or even people putting it on Facebook to kind of get a community support in terms of helping you accomplish what you're trying to do.
Well, out to South Kansas City we go, and Brock's on the line.
Hi.
Hey, Brock.
How you doing?
We're doing pretty well. It's warm in here, and the sun's shining, we're told.
Yeah, it's going to warm up today. Hey, I'm 54, and I just started a new job. But in my old job, I was there for 27 years. So I'm eligible to retire, draw my retirement next year, and or wait till I'm 65 or maybe 70, the way things are going. I don't know. But anyway, I also have my 401k from that old job, and I do have some consumer debt that I'd like to pay off. I agree with your experts there that paying off that higher interest debt first is the thing to do. But as far as my 401k and drawing my retirement, what would be their opinion?
Yeah, good question. Sandy.
Well, I think there's a couple things to take a look at. One, on that pension that he can start drawing on. Obviously, he's going to have a paycheck coming in, so he doesn't need to start that now. The questions you'd want to know is, well, is that going to grow? And is that going to grow at what pace? Let's say it's going to grow at 5% a year, then, or better, you know, then that'd be something that you might want to wait on, you know, so that at the time that you get 65, you get a much bigger monthly check from that. The 401k is something that usually you see rolled to an IRA because you have a much, much wider array of investment choices so you can get to higher quality.
Mm-hmm. You know, so. Lucas?
I think those are two probably the most important things to look at. I probably would look long and hard at that pension and understand all the payout options. I suspect it's probably going to make sense to wait. The other piece is if you've got a paycheck coming in already with the new job, you know, you're going to be layering on additional income. If you take it now, you're going to be given a bigger bite to taxes than you would if you waited and took it in retirement, most likely.
Yeah.
I'd say that Brock is a perfect choice for a comprehensive financial plan, because you can look at those options of when the pension, the Social Security, the 401k and whatnot, and see and model it and see under different scenarios how that would work. But in addition, having those guaranteed pensions is certainly a nice gift you give yourself, because you can't spend them any faster than they come in when you decide to take it.
Was that helpful, Brock?
Yes.
Yeah, have a nice day.
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. You know, that raises a question. Investment instruments can be really complicated and difficult to figure out. So as I'm looking, as I'm developing, writing down my assets and compared to my debts and so forth and so on, it can be pretty hard to do an accurate evaluation of my investment portfolio. Sandy?
Well, there's a couple things about it. One is, you know, the next step is retirement planning, what Alex just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the bogey each year? How much do you have to save each year so that you can get yourself retired at the date you want to get yourself retired?
Yeah.
You know, so, and then are you doing that the smartest way you can? You know, like a company pension with a company match, that's a pretty smart road to do that with.
Uh-huh.
But then also what you raise then is what you're actually investing those dollars in. Are those pretty good quality? Is that going to, you know, heaven forbid, you know, you would want them to grow and work in your favor. You don't want to have losing investments.
Yeah, and it can be really so, yes. Well, impossible to forecast, right?
Yes.
Absolutely, and it sounds like a shameless plug, but I think if you're not comfortable or don't have the ability or the time to evaluate those properly, that's where it makes sense to engage somebody that is a professional to come out and kind of take a good look at that and do some of that financial planning with you to kind of get you on the right path to knowing what you need to do and allocating those investments properly to set you up for success.
Yeah, and investments, it is certainly tricky. We know that in our business. I think anybody sitting around this table, it's hard. I mean, who would have thought the S&P would have been up 30% this year with the fiscal cliff, sequester, the shutdown of the government, nearly defaulting on the debt, and here we got the USA as the best performing index of major indexes in the world with all those headwinds that we thought about. So, you know, diversifying is certainly good, but thinking you can pick the right spot to be every year is asking a whole lot.
Rick in Liberty called in to share his own tip. He has an account at a credit union. He uses 8 different accounts to help him budget. Is that something, a strategy you're familiar with, Lucas?
Absolutely. A lot of people will do that. They'll set it up and they'll have the savings account that you can label them a lot of times now online, and so that you have a specific bucket. So this is my vacation fund. This is my emergency fund. This is my college savings fund. And you can actually then kind of set up your automatic transfers and fund all those different buckets. And people are very behavioral, and you can kind of put some meaning to those list of accounts.
It's an excellent idea, because that way you make sure that you're meeting your goals and targets first. And then when you run out of money, you can't go through Starbucks the rest of the month.
Lucas, are you listening?
Exactly, yeah.
So before we close the chapter on our 2014 resolution to improve our portfolio and to plan accordingly as it relates to our particular situation, what are we missing here? What do you want to put on the table and share with our audience?
I would add one more thing is investing in yourself, which might be, you know, a college course, a community college course, you know, not, I want to say self-help books, but things that motivate you, whether it's books or college or healthy lifestyle, and then figure out a way with the whole thing is to quit worrying, because it really doesn't help you accomplish your goals.
You know, you alluded to this earlier in the show, Alex, talking about more than finances, you're kind of talking about the whole person.
Absolutely.
I like that.
I think it all goes hand in hand. I mean, if you're totally stressed out about money, you're probably not going to be a very good spouse or a parent. So setting the whole picture of goals, you know, community, family, financial, and so forth, and investing in yourself in some fashion that gives you, you know, an appreciation of what you're doing.
Susan writes in an email, she wants to make a budget, and this will kind of take us back to the beginning, but I think it's worth underscoring. She wants to make a budget but doesn't even know where to start.
Some good places to start are consumer credit counseling. Go online and get some of their – you can go to the library and get a paper workbook and work there. You can go to mint.com. You can go spend $60 and buy quickenfinancialplanner.com. Mm. Lots of different ways to tackle that.
Yep, and I would suggest if to get some of those resources, and then the easiest way to do it is just take a little bit of time and kind of outline what's coming in terms of income, and then estimates on what's going out. You can kind of get that information from your bank online or your checkbook.
Alex, before we close this segment.
The bank part is in the Quicken, it all dovetails together, because you can get those feeds off your bank electronically and you can see where exactly you're spending.
Yeah, and you talked about – no, Lucas, you did. You talked about getting a certified financial planner working on your behalf. How do I go about searching for a good financial planner other than the three great people sitting here this morning? I'm playing you for a Christmas gift here, Sandy.
The best place to go is to the Financial Planning Association's website. There's a Find a Planner search, and you can go kind of seek out folks that meet your criteria.
Okay.
That's where I would go and go interview a couple folks and talk to them and get their thoughts and opinions on your situation.
The Cash Money Crew is with us on Central Standard. I'm Bill Anderson, inviting you to stay with us. Coming up, some year-end tax deductions, some credits, some advantages you can benefit from. In fact, some deductions will disappear when the ball falls and closes the curtain on 2013. You should probably know about those. It's the Cash Money Crew on Central Standard here on KCUR. Happy holidays from Central Standard and KCUR. I'm Bill Anderson with the Cash Money Crew, financial planners Sandy Weaver, Lucas Butchell. Anytime he comes here, he also goes by Lewis, and I apologize when I slip. I'm so sorry. And Alex Petrovic is with us this morning also. We're going to pivot away from New Year's resolutions and move into something that is time-sensitive, and that is year-end tax planning ideas. I have to ask you first, though, and I'll start with you, Sandy. Does this get boring or annoying for you? Because I have to believe that this is the same, for the most part, the same advice that you're giving your clients year in and year out. And year in and year out, many of them aren't heeding your advice.
Oh, I don't think so at all. Okay. Because it may not work in a given year, but, you know, and it's always just a little bit different. For example, we have one client, and we're trying to keep their adjusted gross income down below a certain level. Mm-hmm. And so we had a choice this year. We could make a charitable deduction out of the IRA, or we could give away an appreciated security. Okay. And they're already giving to the church. So it was fun to evaluate which way do we go.
Okay. Yeah. And the two of you are in Sandy's choir on that?
Yeah, we had a similar client this year that had a common stock that was being taken private. Uh-huh. So he had a very low cost basis and quite a bit of money. So it was challenging, and it was interesting and fun to engage this person along with their CPA about what we could do to minimize this. And he was over 70 and a half, so uh-huh. we could do charitable giving, or we could give the stock away before it was taken private. But, no, that stuff is interesting. That's what we get paid for.
I like your enthusiasm. You just described that experience as fun. Wow. Lucas?
Yeah, I think the some of the advice is the same and the techniques are similar, but I think the unique client situations is what makes it kind of fun and interesting, and there's always a little bit of a different spin, and it may not work for one client in one year, but things change and circumstances change.
Let's stay with you, Lucas, for a moment. Let's look at some core deductions we should be considering as the year comes to an end.
Yep, so one that a lot of people think of this time of year is charitable deductions. Those are still a great way to reduce your taxable income. Another one is making sure you're funding up your 401k or company retirement plan and taking full advantage of the deduction you can get by putting money there. One that's more and more common is the health savings accounts. So you can put money into those, and that's a great deduction on where it comes on the tax return. And if you haven't contributed the maximum to your health savings account this year, if you qualify, that's a great one to take advantage of.
Sandy?
In addition to that, if your employer is putting money into a health savings account, you might be able to add some to that and get your own deduction by doing that. I think it's age 55 catch-up
okay.
on that. That's another good one. You also want to get your IRA contributions in. If you can do a Roth, if your adjusted gross income is below 178 grand joint, you know, Roth IRA is a good one. If you can't do that, take a look at a deductible IRA if you can get that. And if you can't get a deductible IRA, it's still worthwhile to do a non-deductible IRA contribution.
Okay. Alex?
Yeah, those are all very easy to accomplish if you know what you're doing or what the planner you're using. Obviously, the setting up a retirement planner, if you're self-employed, you still have time to do that. And you can get some great deductions that way, especially if you're a solo practitioner, and which are a lot of us around.
Do I have to be at a certain income level to take full advantage of the charitable deduction on my taxes, or does that apply to everyone?
You have to be itemizing your deductions.
Assuming that.
So if you're taking the standard, then I'd still encourage you to give to charity, but you're not going to get an additional tax deduction for it.
Yeah.
But in terms of as long as you have positive income and you're itemizing your deductions, you'll be able to take advantage of that deduction.
Give me the short answer to this question. I do my own taxes, and I use software, and well, this is a side story, but I always end up getting it wrong anyway, and I always hear it from at least the state of Kansas. But that's for another show. But when I get to the charitable contributions, I have no clue how to evaluate, example, clothing. I'm just completely lost. And I'm basically, am I saying this on the radio? I'm basically guessing at that point.
It needs to be in good or excellent condition, and you use thrift shop value.
Okay.
You know, so
There's a number of calculators out there. Most of the major tax planning suites now will actually have a piece in there, or they'll send you to a partner of theirs to actually go through and value those. And it's a super helpful tool. I've struggled with the same thing, and
yeah.
I know TurboTax does. Not to be plugging a particular product, but I think they've got a tool in there that allows you to put in the item and the condition, and it rates it for you.
Are you wondering how to get the most out of your money as the year draws to a close? The Cash Money Crew can help. Call us 816-235-2888, 235-2888. Feel free to email the show, centralstandard@kcur.org. Joining us is Charles. Charles is calling from Mission. Good morning, Charles.
Yes.
And happy holidays to you, by the way.
Thank you. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're doing really well, and thanks for – I know you've been waiting patiently on the phone line, so I'm going to give the floor to you.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I'm a student. I had graduated with a bachelor's. I'm going back and knocking out prerequisites for medical school. I also am on my second contract in the Army Reserves, and I recently returned from Afghanistan, where I re-enlisted and I received a non-taxed bonus. So being a student with my only income being the measly $200 a month from the reserves and the GI Bill, I am looking – I have a Roth IRA. I opened when I was 23, and I have $15,000 now that was untaxed. I would like to put the annual maximum, $5,500, into that. However, since I've been told that I have to match earned income, I'm unsure that I would meet my $5,500 in earned income. Would I be able to take this bonus and put it towards my retirement in my Roth IRA? And I can take my answer off the air. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you, and wish you the very best, sir.
Well, it depends on, you know, if he has any income that's taxable or not.
Okay.
You know, number one, and that would be, you know, we wouldn't be able to tell. That'd have to look at, you know, his stubs for however he receives that income. But if he has taxable income, and he has till April 15th of next year.
Right.
So this is not a December 31st problem that
right.
he has. If he gets a 1099 or a W-2,
right.
he knows, you know, to what extent he has earned income.
He'll know by January 31st.
What's that, Sandy?
He'll know by January 31st.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a kind of a unique situation, but I think that it's going to be driven on that taxable income bit, and he'll find that out. And I think he's got on the right track in terms of looking to save it for retirement. Using a Roth IRA in his situation seems to be a great fit. But even if he can't, you can still open a taxable investment account and invest it. And then potentially, as he has income later down, you know, maybe next year, or in a future year, he will be able to, you know, take that and effectively move that into a Roth and still accomplish the same thing, maybe just not this year.
Good yeah, point.
You know, and I have to applaud him because he admitted that he's kind of on the lower side of the income range right now, but he's thinking way ahead here. And he's going to end up probably independently wealthy when he's when he reaches retirement, would be my guess.
Yeah, he's got a great start, and you can tell he's thinking two steps ahead, which is great at such a young age.
Yeah, yeah. Anyone want to add to that?
I do. One of the things, you know, we have clients who aren't doctors, aren't high-paid lawyers, but they one couple comes to mind. She was an administrative analyst assistant for the Water District, and he worked for Southwestern Bell. But they had great cash flow management techniques, you know, as you alluded to, Lucas, and they retired at age 60.
Okay.
And have done well.
Feel free to chime in here, but I'm going to list off some of the new taxes for 2014. And I think this relates only to higher income taxpayers. There's going to be an additional Medicare tax, net investment income tax, a new top marginal tax rate. Would that be on like capital gains and dividends or? Oh, boy, you're giving me a puzzled look on that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, that goes up to 39%,
okay.
And that's your ordinary income tax rate. But okay. If you end up there, then your cap gains rate pops from 15 to 20.
Okay.
As well as qualifying dividends.
Yeah.
So give me another area where I can derive great benefit if I move and take care of it here before December 31st. Alex?
Well, one area that, generally speaking, is utilized this time of year for our clients is to look where we might have investment losses to take, called tax loss harvesting.
Okay.
Of course, in a year that we've had, it's pretty hard to find losses this year. I think, like, you know, 90% of all S&P stocks are up. But one area that you might, if you made bond fund purchases this year, you may have some losses to take. You have to sit, you know, the 30 days. But anyway, tax loss harvesting, we always look at before year end for every client to see if we can help them in that area.
Okay. And Lucas, if my income fluctuates from year to year, and let's say I have a huge income this year, what is a strategy I could take to approach my taxes for 2013?
Yep. Some of those deductions we were talking about earlier is just looking for all of the opportunities that you have to maximize those deductions and kind of bring that income down. You know, one of the things, if you're going to have a state tax liability due, one opportunity is to pay that before the end of the year and go ahead and get that deduction because it'll be deductible on the federal side most likely, unless you're in subject to the alternative minimum tax.
Okay.
So that'd be another technique you could use. That's just a timing play. But if your income bounces around, that might be one to take advantage of.
Another thing you could do is if you're going to be writing tuition checks for second semester pretty soon, transfer securities to your child, mm-hmm. your student, mm-hmm. and let them sell it out of their account. They have a much lower tax rate than you do, most likely.
Okay. Let's say I'm in sales. May I go ahead and defer my bonus that I'm anticipating this year?
If you're able to do that.
Yeah. What do you mean if I'm able to do that?
Well, if you're
I don't want to spend time behind bars.
Yeah. If you're in control of your payroll.
Oh, okay.
I'm kidding.
Right.
I'm kidding.
Don't we have a big IRS office here?
Another option if you're getting a year-end bonus, though, is if you haven't maxed out your pension plan, shoot that bonus into your pension plan.
Okay. Okay. Lucas?
Yeah, I think those are great strategies I think that hits all of the ones I can come up with.
Another year in. Some of these are, you know, you can make these decisions up to tax filing time, but college funding 529s are by the year in,
uh-huh.
as well as one that this tax advantage expires that we're all familiar with is charitable giving out of your IRA if you're over 70 and a half. That would, you know, if you don't need the money, you can give it to your charity. That's, you know, all tax-free.
Okay, and that's going away in 2014? Is that what
Between now and the end of the year, it's expiring.
Okay. How about gift-appreciated securities? I'm told there's a double tax benefit to that. Lucas?
Absolutely. When you gift-appreciated securities, assuming they're long-term gains, meaning they've been held for more than a year, when you gift that to a charity, you get the charitable deduction for the market value on the date of the gift. The added benefit is that you're giving away those capital gains and you don't have to pay taxes on those. You know, the charity doesn't have to either because they're a tax-exempt entity. So it's a way to give appreciated securities and take advantage of the charitable deduction and never pay income taxes on the capital gains.
One other idea is if you own mutual funds, you know, this is the season that they give back. They distribute capital gains and dividends and interest to shareholders. And so if you're a shareholder, you know, you might want to call up your mutual fund and see what kind of Christmas present you're going to get from them because you don't want to have a $5,000 distribution on which you'll pay tax if you could have sold a thing and paid a $500 capital gain.
That's Sandy Weaver, owner of Financial Security Advisors. Alex Petrovic is in the house. He's the owner of Petrovic Financial Services. Lucas Butchel, KHC Wealth Management. All three are certified financial planners. Speaking of mutual funds, let's go back to the phones, and Susan is on the line. Hi, Susan.
Good morning. How are you?
We're doing well, thank you.
I'm in my car, although I've pulled over safely, but I'm not very prepared for this question. I don't have anything in front of me, but I was just thinking, would it be worth it to me, I'm 58 years old, to convert any of my IRAs into Roth IRAs, and as I understand it, I would pay the tax now.
You know, that's a great question.
Well, we would recommend that you take a look at your cost basis in the IRA because usually the general rule is you don't pay tax now that you can defer down the road. So let's say that you have an IRA and you have made non-deductible contributions and it's worth $20,000 and your cost basis is $20,000. Yeah, you'd want to convert that in a New York minute. But if your cost basis is zero, they've always been deductible contributions, then, you know, we would advise that you wait and pay the IRS much later.
Okay. All right. So I can just find this cost basis when I look up the kind of the source of my IRA.
You should be able to hopefully look in your tax return at Form 8606. It should be defined there. But, or, you know, go back through how you made those contributions initially into that account.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
Did you have anything to add to that, Lucas?
Yeah, I do. One technique you can use, and this really comes back to your kind of income situation where it might be up and down. If you're in an abnormally low income year for some reason, bonus or compensation was less, one thing you can do is do a Roth IRA conversion and actually intentionally create income and have it taxed at a low or even no tax rate if you have more deductions than you do income. That's a technique we've used with some of our clients to really maximize their retirement savings, getting it into a more preferred asset, and make sure we're using up either all their tax deductions and maybe the low income tax brackets that they're not used to being in, except for the unusual situation.
Okay. All right.
Good luck, Susan.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Alex, you talked about the 529 plan earlier. Do I only benefit from a tax standpoint, tax relief standpoint at the state level?
Right, except for long term, if used for qualified expenses, you do not pay capital gains or income tax on it at all. So it's all tax free earnings if you use it for qualified expenses. And if I could add one just more thing, it's a year end show. The three of us here have individual practices, but we also represent the Greater Kansas City Financial Planning Association, which. We want to give a shout out to the group.
You bet. I want to throw out there, this is a new one for me, the Coverdell Education Savings Account.
Yes,
Sandy.
That's been made permanent now after many near-death misses. you can put in, I think it's $2,000 a year.
Okay.
You can put that in until April 15th, so it's not a year-end thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the nice thing about that is you can use that for, you know, private school. You know, it doesn't need – you can use it for college, too. It grows in there tax-deferred. The disadvantage is you don't get a state tax deduction like you would if you were doing a 529. But it's a nice, handy little account that you can use.
In the 1 minute that we have left, I'm going to go around the studio. Sandy, one thing you want us to think about as we move into 2014, it doesn't necessarily have to be about financial planning.
I would sit down at my kitchen table and write out a list of three things I wanted to do better financially.
Okay. Lucas?
Absolutely. I think sit down with your spouse. I'd set up a date and sit down and just kind of talk about what are the most important things to you. Financial probably is going to be a part of that. And then commit to doing something in those areas in 2014.
Yeah. Alex?
I would go back to look at everything you do on a short-term, mid-term, and long-term basis.
Okay. Okay. Hey, I want to wish you all happy holidays here. Thanks
happy
for coming in.
Happy holidays to you, Bill.
Yeah. Enjoyed
happy
it.
Happy holidays.
And I want to thank our guest, Alex Petrovic of Petrovic Financial, Lucas Butchell of KHC Wealth Management Services, Sandy Weaver of Financial Security Advisors. They joined us all as members of the local Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City. Lucas, did I get it wrong again?
You nailed it.
Okay. Yes. You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows from the Central Standard page of KCUR.org. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. I'm Bill Anderson. This is KCUR.